This is The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, in for Tenzina Vega. Big thanks to Duarte Geraldino, who passed me the mic this week. You'll still be hearing a little bit from him as we bring you some conversations he recently recorded for the show. As shelter-in-place and social distancing orders continue, we're doing our best to follow directions from the CDC to wash our hands, keep surfaces disinfected, and stay 6 feet away from each other. But in jails and prisons, that's a completely different story.
I've got a dear friend named Luther who has been sent to a private prison in Texas, which is pretty terrible. But now, because of the coronavirus, he's pretty nervous. I told him to try to stay away from people. Social distancing, that's impossible in a prison. And there's very little hand sanitizer or soap. It's a pretty miserable existence.
I have several concerns about the close proximity of all of the inmates that are locked up. I have loved ones that are there, and I'm not able to visit with them, and I haven't received mail in a little while. I do know they have confirmed cases of COVID-19 within the prison system. As a formerly incarcerated person, there is no such thing as social distancing. My main concern is for my brother. My brother is 50 years old and is diabetic and has some health issues. And if he was to contract COVID-19, he would probably lose his life. No one wants to lose a loved one to this disease.
Crowded conditions, a constant flow of correctional staff and incarcerated people in and out, and a lack of access to basic cleaning supplies and sanitizer make it difficult to avoid the virus. I myself have spent most of this pandemic looking into conditions in immigration jails in New York and New Jersey. Prison guards warn that a coronavirus outbreak in the correctional system could cause mass chaos for thousands of inmates across the country. At Rikers Island, New York City's main jail complex, over 100 inmates have already tested positive for the virus, and the rate of infection there is significantly higher than in the rest of the city and the rest of the country. I spoke with Kerry Blakinger, staff writer at the Marshall Project, and Keegan Hamilton, senior reporter at Vice News, on how inmates are being affected by the coronavirus outbreak. Kerry said that part of the reason incarcerated populations are at a higher risk for the coronavirus is that some of the basic disease prevention measures just don't work in prisons.
You're just housed on top of each other. There's a lot of dorm settings where you have so little personal space. During transports, you might be chained to the person next to you. And you don't have access to cleaning supplies, even though a lot of facilities are saying that they're giving them out now. You know, we're still widely hearing reports of either watered down supplies or simply inadequate access to supplies, or things are running out. Hand sanitizer is usually banned. There's a lot of issues on that front. But in addition to that, incarcerated populations tend to have a higher rate of various medical issues. So a lot of these people are coming in at a higher risk to begin with.
Keegan, some jails, like in New Jersey, have made the decision to release some of the most vulnerable inmates, including the elderly and chronically ill, because of concerns over the coronavirus. Because of that, some communities are worried about the impact of these types of releases. What's your take on that?
I think that is a short-sighted concern on the part of people in these communities. We're seeing the same thing at the federal level, where recently the Attorney General announced a plan to try to release some inmates early to home confinement, people who are at risk of contracting the virus and have underlying health conditions. This problem, it doesn't just affect prisoners, it affects communities as well. The way that the virus is getting into these facilities more often than not is from the staff and correctional officers. And if it starts to spread and gets out of control in a prison facility or jail that is in the community, that virus is going to make its way back out into the public and affect everyone, not just people who are incarcerated and work at that prison facility.
And is the Bureau of Prisons doing anything specifically that they're saying is helping to slow the spread of the disease, or they hope is hoping to slow the spread of the disease? And have any steps that they've taken been possibly effective yet?
So they have taken some measures. For one thing, they have halted all visits. That's both family visits and legal visits. Inmates are still allowed to make phone calls to their family members and to their attorneys, but those people are no longer being allowed into the prisons. They've also started screening new arrivals at the facilities, which, as I understand it, just means a temperature check and a form to see if they may have been exposed to the virus somewhere along their path to that prison. And guards are also now being required to undergo temperature checks and self-report any symptoms. unfortunately, it seems like this is all too little too late and still not enough. Some of the guards who I've talked to say that, you know, they're being sent home with some, you know, some type of symptoms, maybe it's a runny nose or a cough. And then the headquarters in D.C. is telling them to come back the next day and clearing them without really asking them to isolate or doing a test, because, you know, just like the rest of the country, the prison system doesn't have access to enough tests for the coronavirus to detect it and limit the spread that way.
It's interesting that they're not allowing visitors. Kerry, there's obviously public health benefits to restricting who's coming into the jail, but what are the inmates losing when they no longer have that connection to the outside world?
Well, for one, family connections are important in terms of reentry, and I think it harms people's chances of, you know, getting out and successfully reintegrating. And that's something we've talked about, you know, for a while, sort of broadly, the value of visits. But on top of that, they also lose a form of oversight, because some of the ways in which you report abuses are when someone shows up and you show them, like, I have a black eye, or, you know, whatever injuries you have or whatever problems you have to report that you maybe don't want to tell someone on a recorded phone line. So when people aren't coming into the facilities, when schools are canceled, there's no teachers coming in, when there's no media visits, when there's, you know, some oversight agencies are now not coming in for their site visits, and when you also lose family visits, you basically lose all forms of oversight, and these prisons are just going to be a black hole for the next few months.
And Kerry, you had spent some time in prison yourself, and your cellmate apparently is still in prison. Can you describe what it's like for her there right now?
Yeah, sure. I've been emailing with my cellmate from county jail, who is now in state prison, and, you know, it's been heartbreaking to watch her come to terms with some of the fears and realities that we're realizing here on the free world. And she's, you know, a few days behind this. Like, at first she was kind of like, oh, it's not going to affect me in here. And then when she realized it would, she started emailing me these questions. And there was this one email where her tone markedly changed, and it was all these questions about very basic things, like, how does this spread, and is there a vaccine, are people working on it? And, you know, she was like, we just don't get these answers, and when we do, we don't trust them, which is valid. I mean, incarcerated people aren't going to trust the sources of information they have. And then, you know, as things have gone on, she's started telling me about the various social distancing measures that they've put in place, and, you know, the impacts that's had on her life in terms of there's no school, there's no visits, they're going out to rec yard in shifts, they're making them sit like three seats apart in the mess hall, and all of these things are like good efforts to social distance that also, you know, can really make life more difficult for incarcerated people. And now she's dealing with, you know, something that I think a lot of us are dealing with, is worrying about, you know, elderly loved ones. She has a father who is 79 or 80, and, you know, she hasn't seen him in almost a decade. And, you know, she was like, I wonder how he's doing. And she's trying to get in touch, and she's worried about him and his health. And, you know, in prison, that's just a lot harder to deal with when you can't be there. So it's really sort of driving home how difficult this is, you know, for incarcerated people.
I'm speaking with Kerry Blakinger, staff writer at the Marshall Project, and Keegan Hamilton, senior reporter with Vice News, and we're talking about their coverage of the coronavirus and the impact on incarcerated populations. Keegan, you've reported on the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City, and not only are they still taking new prisoners, but they're holding people who have been charged but not convicted of crimes. What are some alternatives to that? I mean, is there a possibility that those people who are on pretrial detention can be let out given this situation?
That's exactly right. And that's the case at almost every jail in the United States, whether it's a federal jail or a local jail. These people are generally pretrial detainees who have not been convicted of any crimes. In the case of the federal jails in New York, there's one in Manhattan, the MCC, and one in Brooklyn, the MDC. And I'm told that both of those facilities are still taking in new prisoners, people who, you know, have in some cases have been charged and are being asked to self-surrender, to turn themselves in, are asked to come into the jail. That's a risk of bringing in the virus that they've contracted in the community in New York. And the guards who have talked to the facilities are just baffled as to why this person, who in some cases has been home for months, is being asked to suddenly come in at this point in time to turn themselves in. In fact, the inmate at the MDC in Brooklyn who tested positive for COVID-19 was somebody who was a new inmate who was just booked in recently, within the past couple weeks or so, and brought the virus in with them and potentially contaminated multiple areas of the jail. And last count, they had something like 80 to 90 people who may have been exposed in isolation. Some of those people were symptomatic.
You said may have been exposed. And Kerry, I'm just wondering how hard it is to get information out of these jails and prisons. What are some of the issues with transparency in the prison system that could maybe make this virus more difficult to track as the pandemic unfolds?
Well, I think so many prison systems in different states simply do not respond to information requests that they don't want to answer. I asked New York State for a number of days if inmates were going to be allowed to use hand sanitizer now that they were, you know, forced to be making it. And I got no response for many days. They simply ignored the question. But, you know, I often have situations where prison officials are lying to me, and I know they're lying because sometimes I get documentation. Sometimes I just have enough officer reports. And when you have these agencies that have a track record of dishonesty, you know, it really raises concerns about if we're ever really going to know what happens during all of this and what medical care people are or are not offered and what measures they're actually implementing in the way that they say they are.
Kerry Blakinger is a staff writer at the Marshall Project, and Keegan Hamilton is a senior reporter with Vice News. Thank you both for your reporting and for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.